You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Do you have a secret that you keep from everybody? New research suggests you probably do. Coming up, we'll look at why we keep secrets and the consequences and effects of hiding something. Now, Congress passed the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan back in March. The city of Milwaukee will receive $394 million of that federal funding. The mayor of Milwaukee joins us now for a look at his plan to use that money. His project is called the Milwaukee Recovery and Resilience Plan. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Milwaukeeans, where would you like to see that federal money spent? Do you agree with what the mayor's proposed so far on things like housing, workforce development, public safety, and more? What does your community need? If you live elsewhere in the state, what's on the table for federal relief money in your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Tom Barrett is the mayor of the city of Milwaukee. He's held that position since 2004. Mayor Barrett, welcome back to the show.
It's always great to join you.
Before we get to this federal relief money, I want to ask about the big news. Tonight's game, the Bucks game, game six. A few minutes ago I said tomorrow. It is, of course, tonight. Excited?
Well, I'm excited, and it's going to be 111 to 105. The Bucks are going to win. So there you go. I just gave you the secret. It's all taken care of.
Got to call my bookie now. What kind of preparations are you making for the hopeful celebration tonight?
Well, there's a number of things going on. Today's been a very, very busy day. And obviously we're working with our key departments, our public safety departments, our police department, our fire department, our Department of Neighborhood Services, health department, because there are going to be a lot of people in the heart of the city tonight. We're going to probably have, I'm going to guess, close to 100,000 people downtown Milwaukee tonight, because believe it or not, this would be the first time in the history of the city that a championship of a major team, a major sport, is won in Milwaukee. The Braves won in 1957, but they were on the road. The Bucks won in 1971, but they were on the road. So if they win tonight, this will actually be the first one won in the city itself. So it's a pretty historic day.
Well, turning to the reason we actually called you, Mayor Barrett, this money coming from a federal relief plan. Before we dig into the specifics, as you saw this dollar amount, what kind of things are you thinking about the best ways to invest that?
Well, there's a number of areas where I am committed to improving the quality of life for the residents of the city of Milwaukee. And at the top of that list are things like employment projects and employment training, housing, eviction prevention, early childhood education, public safety. Those are the types of things that I think most Milwaukeeans and most people in the state would agree that's where the money should be spent. So what I've done, we received, as you noted in your introduction, $394 million. So we've received the first half of that money. Now, one of the other points I've been making is we don't have to spend all that money right now. In fact, I think we're better off if we are coordinating with the schools, if we're coordinating with the county, if we're coordinating with the state. And so just yesterday, for example, I had a conversation with the superintendent of schools. They're getting a lot of money. They're going to put $700,000 into driver's education. And that's something that's important to reduce reckless driving, something we've seen a lot more of here in southeastern Wisconsin. But again, what I've tried to do is put money where it can have the most immediate impact. And that's why we started with close to $4 million for summer youth employment, because I think we as adults have a moral obligation to create hope and opportunity in the lives of young people. And that's exactly what summer jobs do. Now, the next phase, what we call phase one in our recovery and resilience plan, is to look at those items where we think we can have an immediate impact. And again, they range from employment opportunities to avoiding eviction and stabilizing housing, making sure that we're dealing with some pretty basic issues like having enough vehicles for basic life support for our fire department, again, dealing with reckless driving, preventing eviction. And that's what we're focusing on this first stage. So the package that I've introduced is a $93 million package, which sounds like a lot of money because it is a lot of money, but it is still less than 25% of the entire package. And so for individuals who are interested in bigger ticket items or more things, there are more chapters to this book that are still being written right now.
Well, of that $93 million or so that's committed or suggested so far, let's stick with workforce issues. You've got, I think, just under $14 million aimed at workforce development in Milwaukee. What kind of things would that money go toward?
Well, there's a number of places. Again, it's as you pointed out, it's essentially $14 million. And what we want to do is we want to do everything we can in areas such as skill training, skillful transitions for jobs. We're putting money into some tech programs. We're working with the Milwaukee Area Technical College so that we can get young people involved in short-term training for IT programs. We're putting money into an apprenticeship accelerator project. We think that that's something that's a winner. We're focusing on young people. When I say young people, people who aren't necessarily teenagers but are in their early 20s, so that they can gain access to new paid work experiences in areas like financial services. So it's really trying to get the training and the employment opportunities for people where they are in their lives right now. And so a lot of different programs working very, very closely with Employ Milwaukee. And we are focusing, as we are in every one of these initiatives, on racial equity and inclusion. So it really is geared for people who have been historically underserved by government.
Talking to Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett about plans to use federal relief money in that city. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Or if you live in the Milwaukee area, what you'd like to see as priorities for the remainder of that federal relief money. What are some of the biggest needs you see? And if you're not in the Milwaukee area, are you seeing federal relief money put into action by your city, your county, your school district? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You also mentioned eviction prevention, Mayor Barrett, and there are other housing initiatives. I know. Can you spell out what kind of things you're doing with that so far?
Well, one of the things that we're doing right now, and eviction prevention is at the top of that list. We've been working, as has Milwaukee County, on a right to counsel and working with our legal aid society here to create a program so that individuals can have legal representation if they're being evicted, so that we can avoid even the filing of the lawsuit. And one of the things that I give a lot of credit to the tenants groups, and I give some credit to the landlords, actually, over the last 15 months, because they've recognized that evictions are, in essence, a lose-lose proposition. And when we've got the CARES money and other money, we've been able to prevent a lot of those evictions. I'm proud of the number of evictions we've prevented, but we know that the barriers for evictions are going to be dropped from a legal standpoint. And so we want to have in place measures so that people can get the help if they are facing eviction. But we also want to put money into programs such as a very popular program is one for people who own their homes. We don't want them to lose their homes because they've got needed repairs. And so we've got a program that we're putting $3 million into that will allow people who are going to be primarily older and on fixed incomes, but for example, are facing roofing problems, that they could get those paid for, and that would not have to be paid back until the house is sold. So it really becomes a way for people on fixed incomes who are below the median income for the county to stay in their home. So it's really a number of different levers that we are pulling. We also know that we have to develop more affordable housing. So we're proposing to put a couple million dollars into some affordable housing projects that are ready to go right now, but have seen the costs rise for them during this pandemic. We've seen an increase in the cost for materials. And so what we want to do is we want to make sure that some of these projects can close within the next 60 days and provide them with the help that they need so that they can close. Finally, we work very closely with our housing authority. And I think a lot of people don't recognize that the housing authority for the city of Milwaukee is the largest home provider for low-income people in the state. And so we're working with them to give them some help in some of the areas where they need help as well.
Talking to Tom Barrett, mayor of Milwaukee, looking at plans to spend millions in federal funding to help the city recover from the pandemic. We've heard about housing initiatives, job training. We'll look at some more of the possibilities in the months to come. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What side effects of the pandemic do you think local governments need to address and maybe invest federal relief money in? Is it for you housing or job training or safety or public health? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, looking at federal COVID relief funding and how Milwaukee will use that funding. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How is your community using federal coronavirus relief funds? With this kind of money, what do you think a city like Milwaukee should be focusing on? We've heard, for example, about housing, job training, and more. We'll talk a little bit about safety, public health. What would your priority be? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Mayor Barrett, I know you've mentioned safety as a possible use of the remainder of the money, or at least some of it. Unfortunately, Milwaukee, among a number of communities, big and small in the country, that saw a jump in gun violence and homicide numbers last year. Those numbers, unfortunately, holding steady compared to that this year. Is this something that you think this federal relief money could help with?
Yes, it is. And again, we're using some dollars from there. Some we're using directly. Some we're using funds that we've been able to recoup from the lost revenue. But one of the things that we've seen here, and again, this is something that's happened nationally, is we've seen really an increase in reckless driving. And so what we want to do is deal with this issue from an engineering standpoint, as well as an enforcement standpoint, and finally, a education standpoint. That's why partnering with the Milwaukee Public Schools, the fact that they're putting $700,000 into driver's ed, I think is important, particularly for young people. But I'm proposing that we put $5 million into some permanent improvements on major streets, on residential streets, where we're making changes to the actual streets themselves to make it more difficult for reckless driving to occur. And that means, in some instances, narrowing the driving area, having some bump outs of some curbs, things like that. I think those are all effective. But we also recognize that there has to be a enforcement component. And so that's why we're proposing $500,000 in police overtime, some money for motorcycles so that those police officers can actually really be out there on the streets, some computers. So there's a lot of work that's being done there. We're also proposing to put $3 million into our Office of Violence Prevention. This is a program that's been a successful program. We want to expand it, in particular to the south side of the city of Milwaukee. And this is a program that's housed in our health department. And we recognize that this is a health issue as much as a law enforcement issue. Finally, one of the more basic parts of public safety, I think, is streetlights. And so we've got a rather large allocation of dollars for street lighting circuit reliability, particularly in neighborhoods where there's a lot of crime, that we're going to make sure that we do everything we can to have these streetlights really up to date in terms of infrastructure.
A question I think a lot of local leaders are asking themselves around the country now, as well as criminologists and everyday people, is why? Why last year did we see this increase in gun violence in so many communities around the country? What are you thinking about? Why this is happening? Why now?
Well, it's interesting because we had four consecutive years of decreasing homicides here in the city of Milwaukee. From 2016, 17, 18, 19, we saw decreasing homicides every year. Last year, actually, I could see the increase beginning before the pandemic. But clearly, I think the pandemic created a lot of challenges for people in their lives. We've also seen a real explosion nationally in the number of deaths from opioid and heroin. And that continues to be part of the challenge that we face nationally and locally. And that's not an urban issue. That's a problem that you see throughout the state of Wisconsin. The use of, again, of those substances has caused a lot of problems. And it's not unrelated to a life of crime, quite honestly.
Talking to Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett about a federal COVID relief money, how he is proposing Milwaukee use at least some of it at this point and plans for more of it down the road. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Derek is with us in Green Bay. Derek, hi.
How he is proposing Milwaukee use some of it at this point and for more of it.
Derek, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, yes, you're on the air, Derek. Go ahead.
Hi, Mayor Barrett. My name is Derek Erickson. I live in Green Bay, and I'm a social studies teacher. And historically, we've looked at Milwaukee from the redlining districting areas in the 1930s. And I'm wondering, since you were talking about housing and affordable housing in the city, Has that been an aspect that the local government has looked at in Milwaukee?
Well, it has. And in fact, your question's an excellent question, and I'll give you sort of an assignment, if you will. Since you're a teacher, you can go to milwaukee.gov/ARPA, and you can see the actual American Rescue Plan that I am proposing. And there are literally dozens of maps in this proposal. And the reason we put the maps in is because we want to show that what we're trying to do is try to deal with the problems in these historically underserved areas. And whether it's housing, whether it's public safety, whether it's education, whether it's you name it, we are looking at these issues through the prism of racial equity and inclusion, because we know that that has historically been an issue here in Milwaukee.
Thanks for the call, Derek. And that reminds me that there was a policy instituted last summer, I think it was, in Milwaukee, requiring city departments to consider racial equity in decision-making. How did you incorporate racial equity into these plans for the use of these federal funds?
Again, it's right there on the very much on the front burner. Every one of these proposals was viewed through that prism, so that we can have measurable performance. There are performance measures, so that you can look at both the intent as well as the outcome measures. But we felt that that was something important to include in this, and so in every single one of these proposals, it is viewed through racial equity and inclusion as well.
Let's bring on another caller now. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi. So on June 8th of this year at approximately 10:30, I was in a gas station on 41st and Capitol. A couple of guys start arguing over $20. One said that he lost it, thought the other guy had picked it up. He said he got it out of the ATM. Part of it is these two guys end up brandishing pistols in the gas station. I offered up $20 out of my own money because I just got paid for some remodeling. Solved the problem. They went their separate ways. I contacted the police, and I received no response. And I'm just, you know, it's like the guys in the gas station called. There's clearly video of it. I realize it's kind of a non-incident. Like, I feel like there's not follow-up. And, I mean, we need to, you know.
Marcus, well, first, let me thank you for helping solve the problem. I appreciate that very, very much. And I think it's a situation where I've talked to many, many people who have been very, very pleased with the response they've gotten from police, and I've talked to others like you who are not pleased because they either didn't get a good response or they didn't get any response whatsoever. I do think a lot of times it's going to depend upon when you talk to them, because whether they have, I don't want to call it a lull, because I don't know if they have a lull, but it may be if the problem has been addressed that they're moving on to the next problem. But obviously, I want to make sure that we have good police-community relations, because the more the residents of this city can work with and trust the police, the better off we are. But it's also important for me to be a city where our police can work with and respect our residents. It's the only way we make it work is if there's mutual respect, and that's something that I'm committed to.
Marcus, thanks for that call. We'll go to Mike now in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hi, Mayor. So in respect to the erratic driving, I occasionally drive through Milwaukee's areas, and a lot of cars are running the red lights at intersections, controlled intersections. What about creating numerous, you know, maybe staging it 10, 20 every year, but roundabouts where there are presently stop-and-go lights? It might require a little bit of real estate acquisition, but at least that way you can slow down some of these cars flying through intersections and keep the traffic moving at the same time.
Mike, thanks for the call. Mayor Barrett, you had mentioned using some of the relief money we've been talking about for engineering some of these traffic solutions.
Well, in our conversations with the Department of Public Works, I don't recall roundabouts being specifically part of this, just to give him my accurate answer there. But that doesn't mean that we're not trying to use engineering. And I think that's his basic point. How can you use engineering to prevent reckless driving? And we really have worked closely with the Department of Public Works networks so that they can use, again, essentially $5 million to make changes. And that means in some instances, for example, making islands larger or having pedestrian crossways that are safer. We've done some work for bicycle lanes and things like that. I certainly am familiar with the roundabouts. I am not opposed to that. One of the other things we've had people use in some neighborhoods are the speed bumps. So I think all that's on the table. And to me, one of the strengths of city government and local government is there's not a lot of theory here. It's, okay, what works? If it works, we do it. If it doesn't work, we move on to something else. So I am certainly not opposed to that. And we have some roundabouts. And I certainly will check with the city Department of Public Works to see what their intentions are to do even more.
Thanks for that call, Mike. In our last minute, Mayor Barrett, Milwaukee won a big convention, the Democratic National Convention in 2020. Of course, because of the pandemic, it didn't happen. I know it's only 2021, but I've seen people making the case that there should be a do-over and Milwaukee should get picked for 2024. Are you going to be making that case?
Well, we will certainly make that case, but I would caution people because let's go back to 2020. The Bucks obviously had a great team then, and it's not a situation where we could declare them the NBA champ for 2021. They have to go out and earn it, and I think they're about to do that. Similarly, we had the great chance, and we had the convention in 2020, but there will be competition for it in 2024. So we have to earn it again. I think one of the other questions there is, what will conventions look like in 2024? But I put a tremendous amount of work in that. I'm very proud that we got the convention. But we'll take a lot of work to get it in 2024. It certainly is not out of the question, and it's certainly something I would be interested in.
Mayor Barrett, thanks for joining us again.
All right, thank you very much.
That's Tom Barrett, mayor of the city of Milwaukee. He's held the position since 2004. We talked to him about his plans to use American Rescue Plan funds for Milwaukee's housing and workforce development needs, among other things. Do you have an embarrassing secret that you keep from pretty much everybody? If so, you've got plenty of company. A new British survey by OnePoll shows that the average adult actually keeps two of those pieces of information locked away. Among the most common secrets, mental health issues, embarrassing incidents, internet history, infidelity, bank and credit card statements, faking an illness to avoid a commitment, fears and phobias, and political opinions. About a fifth of those surveyed say they keep secrets to avoid relationship issues, and about one in five do so to avoid police scrutiny. Who are we not sharing our secrets with? One in five say their mom, 16% say best friends, another 16% say their partners. Now, that's one survey, but our next guest has been studying our secrets for years. He says the hardest thing about secrets is not keeping them to ourselves, but the toll that the information takes on us, and that's what we're going to focus on today. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you ever kept a deep, dark secret? You don't have to tell us what it is, but how did it feel carrying it around? Did you eventually share it with somebody? How did it feel to get it off your chest? Or did you regret it? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Michael Slepian is the Sanford C. Bernstein and Company Associate Professor of Leadership and Ethics at Columbia Business School. He studies the psychology of secrecy. Michael, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get to your own research, this British survey, non-scientific, I know, but looking at the results, so what struck you?
One thing right away is the number two is it's bigger than that. It's larger than that. That's quite the underestimate based off our research. We see on average people have about 13 secrets at any given moment. And so I think it partly depends on how you ask the question and how you help people report on these things.
One thing that seems like it must be a challenge for you is, by its nature, this must be a tough topic to study and get people to talk about honestly, given that these are things they're keeping secret. How do you tackle that?
Yeah, absolutely. And so this is the reason why for decades we haven't known too much about secrecy and how our secrets hurt us for this very reason, they're hard to study. The way people used to think about it is that what's hard about having a secret is having to hide it in conversation, having to be careful about what you say, maybe even having to sort of dance around the truth when you're talking to someone. But that turns out to not be the predominant experience people have with their secrets. And so the way we've found this out is we simply started at the beginning. What if we knew nothing about secrets? And we asked people, what secrets are they keeping? And then we asked people, when that secret comes to mind, what's going on? And very rarely do people have to hide a secret from someone, but we think about our secrets all the time.
Yeah, that reminds me, the telltale heart, right? The person goes mad thinking about this secret that they have. That's really the hard work of a secret, the fact that we keep, I don't know, thinking about it.
Yeah, we have to think about it on our own and feel alone with it and without others' help and perspectives. The hard part about having a secret is that, having to live with it alone, not having to hide it.
What does that do for our psychological well-being if we're sitting on big secrets that we're not telling our significant other or other people close to us in our lives? How much does that hurt us?
So I'll tell you what you can do about it. The solution is pretty straightforward, in fact, is talk to someone. It doesn't have to be the person you're hiding the secret from, although there are times when that's the right choice as well. But just talk to someone, and what you get out of that conversation, we find, is often something very beneficial. People feel supported or heard, or they get some kind of new perspective or advice or guidance. It's hard to come to new perspectives on your own. That's what other people are for.
So that could be a therapist or a bartender or whatever. It doesn't necessarily matter who it is.
Exactly. As long as you feel comfortable talking with that person and you feel like you can trust them and that they'll keep your secret safe.
Talking to Michael Slepian. He studies the psychology of secrecy. He's at Columbia Business School. We're talking about secrets, why we keep them, why they nag at us, what kind of secrets we have. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions on the psychology of secrecy. Have you had a situation in your life where you kept a secret for a long time? Was it hard to do that? Not just on like not letting it slip, but on having it weigh on you all the time. Has someone ever shared a secret with you? Do you want to share that story with us? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. No, we're not asking you to share your big secret with us. I mean, I guess if you want to, but you don't have to. 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Michael, in your research, I know you've looked at what kind of secrets we tend to keep. What dominates the top five or so secrets in our world?
So some of the common secrets we keep include lying to someone or violating someone's trust and sort of not admitting to that. One of the most common secrets people have that they don't talk about or don't tell anyone about is what we call extra-relational thoughts, meaning you are in a relationship and thinking romantically about someone else. Money, addictions, ambitions are often kept secret as well. And then a host of things around work, sort of discontent with work or actually discontent more broadly, discontent with your romantic life or discontent with your social life are common ones as well.
It can kind of make sense to keep those secrets because we could see examples of people maybe being open about them. I'm thinking all the way back to Jimmy Carter admitting in an interview that he had felt lust in his heart, contrary to his biblical training, and got, I think, mocked a lot for that admission. I don't know. Is there a benefit to keeping a secret like that?
So I think so. And I really love that quote too. And yes, just because secrets hurt us doesn't mean we're wrong to keep them. There are things where if you're protecting someone's feelings and it's not causing any damage for someone to not know something, it's not necessarily harmful for a relationship. This doesn't mean it doesn't harm you. It's likely to if it's something that's on your mind and that you feel alone with.
Now, you've also looked at who in our lives, in our relationships, we tend to keep secrets from. Who are some of the most likely people we're going to have something? Oh, I guess given that a lot of them are relationship related, I guess I've got a guess as to a common one. But what have you found?
Yeah, it's exactly who you're thinking. Your friends, romantic partners, family, coworkers. We keep secrets across all these relationships, although we don't reveal secrets in the same way as, and there's certain qualities in a person that makes it more likely we reveal a secret to them.
Now, a worry I think a lot of people would have is, okay, if there's a secret that I don't want person A to find out, and maybe there's a benefit to me talking to person B, but the more people who know a secret, the less secret it gets. I don't know. Is that a powerful disincentive to doing that thing that would be therapeutic, talking about it, but runs a risk?
Yeah. So one thing to consider besides, you know, what is the impact of revealing the secret on me? Is what is the impact of sharing a secret with another person? And we find that when you confide a secret in someone, they understand that as an act of intimacy, that you're opening up to them and trusting them and making yourself vulnerable to them. So that's the good part. But also people can feel burdened by other people's secrets. And to the extent your social networks overlap, to the extent now you're going to have to hide a secret on someone's behalf, you're creating a burden for them.
I want to get back to how you researched this, because I'm curious about what the Michael Slepian lab is like. What if when people meet you for research or you go out into the field and research, what kind of process do you do to figure out how people feel when they have secrets and all that?
We give people a list of 38 common secrets that people commonly keep. We see when we give people this list of 38 categories of secrets, the average person at any given moment has 13 of those 38 categories of secrets. That's where that number 13 comes from. When we ask people just open-ended, what's the secret you're currently keeping? There's a 92% chance it fits one of that list. And we find that 97% of people have at least one of those secrets right now. So, you know, it's a little under 40, but it's fairly comprehensive as far as what are the secrets people commonly keep.
And then how do we figure out, I guess, the stress load that comes with the secret? How do you measure that?
So one way I like to think about it is sort of think about your secret. If your secret's sort of traveling, a day in the life of your secret, you know, where is it? What's happening when it's on your mind? And so what we'll do is ask people in the past week, did you find yourself thinking a lot about this secret? Or how many times, to your best estimate, did you find yourself thinking about this secret? And we'll also ask, you know, how many times did you find yourself having to hide that secret in conversation? We see from just those two questions alone, people far more frequently are thinking about their secrets outside of concealment context than they actually have to hide their secrets in conversation. And we also ask people, how much is this secret hurting you? How much is this sort of decreasing your satisfaction with life or your happiness? And we find that it is the more you have a secret on your mind, the more frequently you're mind wandering to the secret or ruminating on a secret, the more harmful the secret is, not the frequency of concealment.
We're talking about the consequences and effects of keeping secrets. Michael Slepian stays with us, Associate Professor of Leadership and Ethics at Columbia Business School, where he studies the psychology of secrecy. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. You don't have to tell us what your secret is. But what is it like if you've had a situation in your life where you felt like you had to keep something from somebody important to you? Did you kind of carry a stress with that with you, either of the effort of keeping the secret or just having it nag at you, maybe at your conscience along the way? Was there ever a situation where you got a secret off your chest to someone? How did that feel? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about why we keep secrets and the consequences of keeping them. A new British survey says adults keep two embarrassing secrets from everyone they know. Our guest says two, more like 13, probably, according to his research. And he says the problem of having a secret is not so much keeping it hidden, but that you have to think about it and live with it. Michael Slepian is an associate professor of leadership and ethics at Columbia Business School, where he studies the psychology of secrecy. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. You could share, if you'd like, how keeping secrets, your own or someone else's, how it's affected your mood, your well-being. Or join in with a question about secrecy and how it affects us. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Maria is with us in, I'm sorry, Marta is with us in Milwaukee. Marta, hi.
Hi. I was telling your co-host that when I would visit my grandmother and grandfather in Flint, Michigan, they told us never to climb the tree in the park. And, of course, my brother and I climbed the tree in the park. Well, one time I did fall out of the tree, and I broke my arm.
Uh-oh.
And my brother did everything for me. He tied my shoes. He cut my meat. He and I covered this thing beautifully. And it wasn't I actually had to have my arm set in a cast, but we told them that I fell down the stairs at the park. and didn't tell him about the tree.
Wow.
Well, then about 12 years later, we fessed up to my mother that I did climb the tree and I did fall out of the tree.
Did that nag at you, Marta, when you were a kid?
And
were you worried and stressed about that?
That we kept for so long.
Wow. Marta, thank you so much for sharing that story. Wow, 12 years for a pair of kids to keep that secret. That's pretty impressive. Michael, have you looked at kids and secrets? That's I don't know if everybody's as talented at that as Marta and her brother.
Studying kids is a whole different situation.
Sure.
But I have, you know, there's this question of time and how secrets affect us over time. And some secrets get easier over time. They become less relevant to your life and the harm sort of fades with it. But things can bring the secret back into focus, or a secret can get harder with time or if it's causing some kind of damage.
Thanks a lot for sharing that story, Marta, at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Rebecca now in Appleton. Rebecca, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Rebecca?
So interestingly, my husband and I share a secret. I've chosen to share this secret with most of my friends and family, but he has decided to keep it to himself, to his friends and family. So it can be confusing sometimes remembering who knows the secret and who doesn't. And for me, it can be stressful because I've chosen to not keep it and to be open about this particular aspect. And he is not. So that does cause conflict for us.
Interesting, Rebecca. Thanks a lot. So in addition to the usual issues about information management, maybe the stress of the secret, it's a shared secret, Michael, and they're having to negotiate who gets to know it and who doesn't.
Yeah, normally when we think of a shared secret, we think of how it's nice to sort of be able to talk about it with the other person. But here, it's interesting. It's almost like a discrepancy over who owns the information or who gets to decide what happens with it. I've certainly been in the situation where I'm talking about something to someone and the other person who's relevant would say, like, wait, I thought we weren't telling people this. I didn't realize you were going to talk about this with other people. And it's like, oh, I didn't realize it had to be secret. So there's certainly these discrepancies that can arise when we share a secret, but that doesn't make as much sense for the personal context, right? It only comes into play when there's two people.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Michael Slepian. He studies the psychology of secrecy at Columbia Business School. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Jim is with us now in Madison. Jim, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I called it about the adage that three people can keep a secret if two of them are dead. And I noticed that a lot of times there are secrets that are kept within our government, and they're kept until all the people who were involved in that incident have died, and then they become unclassified. And it relates to me because I'm one of the secret keepers for my company, and I know lots of things about people because I've had to do investigations and, you know, things that have come to the surface because of different behaviors. And there's the stress of having to see people in a more social context when I know something about them and know that there's an investigation going on, but I, of course, I'm keeping the secret, to be pretty difficult. And there isn't really a good way to vent that except to a counselor.
Right. Yeah. I was going to say, Jim, how do you deal with that stress? Because you can't just blab about it with a bartender. So this is, I assume, a legally confidential information you're handling here.
Right. So, and sometimes it's, you know, talking to other people in the company that actually know about the situation and in helping me deal with it. But sometimes the things are actually legal and I can't actually say things to them either. And so having a therapist has helped quite a bit, especially when I've had to help put people that I consider my friends in jail.
Wow. Jim, thanks a lot for that call. Michael, Jim dealing with maybe a different level of secret than most of us might have to face on a daily basis, but he says therapy helps him deal with that stress.
I think that story really well illustrates that even when it comes to information that's not about us or about our past or about who we are, but we have to keep it a secret for some reason, how even that is frustrating. And I think it just really reveals how much sharing and communicating with others is just part of what it means to be human. And it's like, we have a thought, we want to share it. And it's frustrating when something's preventing us.
Thanks a lot for sharing that story. We'll go next to Park in La Crosse. Park, hi. Oh, no, your phone line. Park, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, what did you want to tell us about, Park?
Well, I am a pastor, actually, so part of my line of work is hearing people dealing with secrets and their impact on their life. And an observation I've come to over the years is that secrets basically have the power we give to them. So, in other words, if it's something that we're really worried about, it tends to eat on us more than otherwise. And usually I counsel people that it's, a lot of times it's better just to be honest and get out there and deal with the fallout than to continually worry, well, what will people think, or who do I have to keep this from?
And Park, do people usually take that advice, or are we so caught up in the power of that secret that we've given it that it's hard to do that?
That's a big step for people to try to let that go, but generally they're better off if they can.
Park, thanks a lot. And Michael, that matches up with some of what you said, the benefits of sharing that secret sometimes.
Yeah, it's not just in our research, it's not just about like saying it out loud and getting it off our chest. At least we believe that the next most important step is that someone's there responding to what you've just said, because it's what they say that turns out to be helpful. You know, they say they're there for you, or I'm going to help you through this, or even just I hear you. And so, you know, there are other ways to express a secret, for example, anonymously on the internet. But if you don't get anything back from that, it's not going to be as helpful. And that's why a conversation can be so helpful.
Thanks a lot for that call, Park. We heard from Judy in Madison, who wonders if there's a difference between keeping a secret and just being a private person who doesn't share a lot. So maybe I'm not deliberately keeping from you. I just think it's maybe none of your business and maybe you don't care anyway.
Yeah, this is an absolutely important part. Those are two different things. When we think of privacy, it's sort of how much social distance we put in between ourselves and others. And, you know, a private person wouldn't let just anyone into that sort of sphere of more intimate topics. But that's very different from having a very specific experience that you don't want someone or some specific person to know.
Michael, as we wrap up, any final words of encouragement to someone coping with keeping a tough secret right now?
Some of the ways in which a secret can harm are people feel alone with the secret or feel ashamed for having the secret or just feel unsure of what to do. And it turns out, again, just finding someone who can hear you out can change that, can change your thinking. It's really hard to step outside of your usual ways of thinking, but it's really easy for someone else to help you do that. And so whoever it is, it can be a really powerful conversation in terms of helping you cope.
Michael, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Michael Slepian is an associate professor of leadership and ethics at Columbia Business School. He studies the psychology of secrecy. We talked about why we keep secrets, how those secrets affect us, and how to tell what to do with secrets that are eating at us.